part of the reason why I'm so passionate about reducing and ultimately getting rid of property taxes, because I think those things kind of go hand in hand. Like, once you own your property, you don't, there's no guarantee you're always going to have a steady income. You can lose your job. You can have a health issue. There's a million things. The government should not be able to confiscate your property from you because you can't pay your property taxes.
Welcome back to the Interview Podcast from Milbank, South Dakota. This is Craig Weinberg. TheInterviewPodcast.org is our website where you can find all the conversations we've had archived there and also where you can help support the show. We are funded solely by the value for value model, the concept that says if you get value out of this product that we deliver to you with no strings attached, and that value is a dollar amount, you can go to TheInterviewPodcast.org, click on the support button, send that dollar our way so we can continue having these conversations. We're back with another gubernatorial candidate here in South Dakota. Toby Doden is running in the Republican primary, and he was gracious enough to come in the studio and sit down with us and have a conversation about why he is the best choice for governor in 2026 of South Dakota. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. Let's jump right into it with Toby Doden.
To be sure, I never thought it was going to be fun, but in fact, there was a months, probably more than 18 months long process of people trying to get me to run because they were, you know, sick and tired of career politicians doing career politician things. And so it was a long, tedious process to get to the point where I decided I would jump in with both feet. But no, in all seriousness, it's been a great time. Probably one of the most rewarding things I've ever done, to be honest with you.
Just because the people you got to meet?
Every day I have something different. I have gotten to meet thousands and thousands of people just on the bus tour, not to mention the thousands of people that we met the last 15, 16, 17 months traveling around the state. And, you know, getting to expand my horizons, learn new things literally every single day. You know, sometimes in business you get so locked in on doing things a certain way. It's been a great experience to get outside of that box, meet literally thousands of new people, many of which I would call friends at this point. And so it's just been incredibly rewarding.
You're from Aberdeen?
I live in Aberdeen. I was born in the big town of Groton, South Dakota, a small little farm town about 20 miles east of Aberdeen. And I lived there.
The Tigers? Is that what they are?
The Groton Tigers, yeah. Listen, I had a lot of battles with with the Milbank Bulldogs, including probably the most famous ex-Bulldog now, Kalen DeBoer. Oh. Kalen and I were really good buddies in high school. We competed against each other in football, basketball, track. He and I were in the same class, 1993 graduates. Haven't kept up with him, but he was a great guy. We got along really well. I had a lot of really good friends from Milbank in high school. So we competed very hard in sports, but we were very close off court, off the field. So people talk all the time about how South Dakota has produced these amazingly successful politicians, right? Mm-hmm. Tom Daschle, John Thune, Kristi Noem, all these people that have had national roles. What we don't talk about is last weekend, Josh Heupel and Kalen DeBoer. One was an Aberdeen Central graduate. One was a Milbank graduate. Two of the top coaches in all of college football going head-to-head as Tennessee played Alabama last weekend. That's amazing to me as well. I mean, South Dakota has produced so many talented people in sports, politics, business, and all other kinds of sectors. So it's a pretty amazing place to live.
Yeah, it's wild. It's kind of flat. I mean, I prefer curvy roads, but that's just me. Tom Patterson is from here as well.
He is.
Tommy John.
I
wear your underpants. He came from a...
Yeah, you can probably confirm this with him. If I'm not his best customer, I am one of his best customers. I fell in love with his product years ago before he was really, before Tommy John was even that popular, even back when the stitches didn't quite line up right and all that kind of stuff. And so, what a great story his life has been. And he's a big advocate for a lot of the things I believe in. Yeah. So, yeah.
Good yeah, dude. This building we're in was his family's building 100 years ago.
Wow.
So it's kind of cool. Anyway.
That is cool.
So yesterday or the day before, I saw Marty Jackley posted his opinion, or I guess that's what it was, of the proposed constitutional amendment to, if it gets enough signatures, it'll be on the ballot in 26, to abolish property taxes in South Dakota. Is that realistic?
Abolishing property taxes is absolutely realistic, and I think it's a must at some point. I've talked about this. In fact, this is largely one of the main things I'm running on in this campaign, is I don't believe property taxes are constitutional. I think there are more fair and more equitable ways to generate revenue.
Enough?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are so many ways to generate revenue. The problem I have found with politicians, especially ones that hang around for a long time, is they stop trying to innovate. They stop trying to change things. They get so dug into raising money, getting reelected, looking for a higher office to run for, that they forget why they ran in the first place, which is to make meaningful improvement in people's lives in their districts or their states. And so when an outsider like me comes in and looks at things through a different lens, you can clearly see there are opportunities to raise, you know, sums of revenue and get more efficient. Listen, I have yet to speak to a single resident of this state that believes our state government is efficient. So if we believe that our government isn't efficient, the first thing we have to do is go in and make sure that we get rid of all the systemic inefficiencies. That alone is going to be a massive cost savings to our state. And so there are other ways to pay for property taxes.
So the argument against it is, well, our schools are going to lose funding. So, you know, holy crap, we won't have schools, your counties won't have roads, bridges are going to fall apart. In your mind, what's a good method to fund those? I mean, I don't know. I guess we could probably argue whether they need to be funded at the same level. But how do you fund them at least where they're at to be somewhat consistent if you say no more property tax?
Yeah. Our system is set up so that the politicians that have been in office a long time, they have an opportunity to raise the most amount of money. Lots of ways that they can use taxpayer money to facilitate themselves without calling it campaigning. And they're able to spin these narratives through a bullhorn. What you just said is one of them. So just because we've been funding schools from a particular revenue source for decades doesn't mean that we can't fund that school from a different revenue source. That's like saying, if you quit your job, you're never going to be able to pay your car payment and your house payment. Well, I'm taking a better job down the road. Not only am I going to be able to take care of my car payment, my house payment, I'm going to be able to save some money every month.
So what's that method? Like, in your mind, what other source could there be that you could see that say, no, this makes sense? This would be one.
Absolutely. Number one, our economy here is stagnant. As a very pro-business candidate to be the guy running this state, I'll be the most pro-business governor the state has ever seen. And we can get into the economy. But when you have a very good businessman that knows how to stimulate the economy and to start turning our dollars over quicker, we're going to see a significant increase in the tax base. Not raising the amount of tax, the percentage, but just get a wider tax base. So there's going to be more money to go around. Number two, there are external revenue streams that this state has never even attempted to harvest, because a lot of the external revenue sources that politicians would have to fight to get enacted would be having adverse impacts on some of their largest campaign donors. And so what happens in politics, largely, not all of them, I don't want to just sweep everybody with a brush here, but largely what happens to career politicians is they get max donation checks from the same people in the same companies year after year after year. When that happens, the line blurs from who's making the decision, the candidate, or all of the money that is supporting the candidate. Because if the money dries up, the candidate's done. So they can.
So it's all self-preservation.
100%. And even if it's subconscious, you know what your biggest donor wants. Mm-hmm. He told you what he wanted when he gave you the money, right? So when you take the money from somebody who's in this business or that business, it's implied what you are taking the money to do, which is to help that person's business.
But isn't it illegal to put strings on campaign money?
They're not writing a contract, but if if you're running a beer distributorship and you give me a max donation check, you're not giving it to me so I can go plant more flowers at Central Park. Like there's a reason you're giving me the money, right? And so we get a lot of $20 donations, $5 donations, because I'm a man of the people and people know that I'm not a politician. So the people that are actually struggling the most in this state, sadly, are the ones that are sending in the $5 and $10 because they see me as hope for the future of South Dakota, somebody that actually cares about the issues that are negatively impacting them and their families, right? Dusty Johnson and the other politicians, all they want to talk about are prisons, data centers, all this stuff. You know what I've been talking about? I've been talking about public safety. I've been talking about our infrastructure, our rural health care, our education, housing. These are the things I've been talking about, right? Because these are the things that actually matter to people that live in the state that are still suffering from hyperinflation under the Biden-Harris administration, rising property taxes, inefficient state government. These are the things people care about, right? Career politicians only talk about the things that the donors tell them to talk about. Subsidies for data centers, subsidies for wind farms, building the most expensive prison in the Midwest. It's all coming from the donor class, and it's being funneled through the politicians. And the reason, sorry, it's a long answer, but the reason that Dusty Johnson and the people in D.C. that are backing him are so afraid of me and my campaign is I'm not taking a nickel from these people. I am turning down almost daily max donations from the same people that are donating to Dusty Johnson. I won't take their money because on day one, I'm not taking any phone calls. I'm only making decisions based on the people. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less.
So how do you guard yourself? Let's go down the road. You win, you're governor. First off, that can be an endless job, for a minute. How do you guard yourself to not become the thing that everyone seems to become when they get in these offices?
Generally speaking, the people that end up in the situation I just described are people that started as a state legislator in their 20s, got into the PUC, just did this, that, or the other thing. And then they just keep following these steps, raising money, getting reelected, running for a higher office. They just keep running for a higher office. Next thing you know, they're a U.S. congressman. Next thing you know, they're coming back to run for governor. I left one of the most successful companies in our entire state as the CEO, kicking and screaming all the while, mm-hmm, to jump into this race to give the future of South Dakota a fair shot. And so all I want to do is I want to go to peer. I want to get up every morning. I want to fix as many problems as I can. I want to make life as easy as possible for the people that live here, all of the people. And then when I'm done, I'm going to go back home. Hopefully they'll give me my job back at the company I created. I want to play with my puppies and my cats, my grandchildren. I have an amazing family, 4 adult kids, all very high-level people in my company. I have a wife that I met in high school. We were high school sweethearts. We've been together for 35 years. I have 2 beautiful grandkids. One's 8 months. One is 5 weeks. That's what I'm going back to. I'm not raising money. I'm not getting all these things. I'm not flying around the country taking photo ops. I am going to run South Dakota like a CEO should. We are going to get more nimble. We are going to get more efficient. We are going to find ways, unique ways, to generate more revenue. And we're going to use these budget surpluses to start actually fixing things that the politicians have been promising for 30 years, like better rural health care. Our education system, for example, statistically, it's the worst it's ever been, right? And we spend 30% of our state budget on education, and all we've accomplished the last 30 years is funneling more and more money to PEER, to the bureaucrats, the administrators, and the fat cats in PEER. And we've taken it from the teachers in the rural schools, and we've shut mom and dad out of the entire process. And so these are the actual things. Put the rich people aside, put all the wealthy stuff aside, all the big donors. What you have left is 90% of the people in South Dakota, and all they care about is going and watching their kids at soccer, making their mortgage payment, having a safe car to drive, having a good public school to drop their kid off, having a doctor and an emergency room that's local so they have access to good health care. They care about driving on good roads, having safe bridges. These are the things actual people care about. And I am the candidate that shuts out all the nonsense. And I don't know if you've followed my campaign messaging or if you've seen any of our stuff online. This is what I talk about all day, every day, the things that people actually care about. Most citizens in South Dakota don't care about the data centers. They didn't care about the prison. They didn't want them.
No, they don't want it in their backyard, certainly.
They don't want to pay for them.
Well, there's that, too.
They don't want to pay for them. I'm not anti-data center. I'm pro-data center. Donald Trump said recently that we have to be the leader in this space, AI, data collection, data centers. I agree. We have to dominate. We cannot let any other country get their foothold on any of this stuff. My only point is, while we have many South Dakotans that are already struggling to pay their bills and support their families, I am 100% against taking more money from them and handing it off to these rich people to build for-profit data centers. Do you know how much money these data centers make? Tens of millions of dollars. They don't need subsidies. They're demanding subsidies because they know that politicians like Dusty Johnson will cave in and give them to them. They know I won't. And so that's why we're seeing all this pushback against me, not just from Dusty Johnson, but all of the people, sadly, that want these taxpayer handouts, and I just will not bend on it.
Where is the biggest waste right now in South Dakota government?
Well, that's hard to say because they say their books are open, but what we have access to is pretty high-level stuff. I mean, like 10,000-foot stuff. We don't get to drill down and really look. Here's what I can tell you. As somebody who has started many businesses, as somebody who has bought quite a few businesses, many of which that were failing when I bought them, is the overwhelming majority of waste isn't done on purpose. The people that are wasting the money aren't doing it on purpose, and they're not bad people. They're good people. It's systemic inefficiencies. And that is set up by people above them. They're just doing as they're told, right? And so I talk a lot about culture. Every company I've ever taken over, on day one, I go into that company, I pull every single employee into a room, and I tell them what the new culture is going to look like. And I breed that culture personally every second of every day. And that just reverberates through every single company. On day one, when I show up and I make it very well known that I am going to outwork every single state employee 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and they start seeing meaningful changes. They start seeing me literally meeting with all of the heads of all the departments, talking to people at every level in every department, taking good suggestions, having my team follow up on them, and start actually finding meaningful ways to get more efficient, that culture will reverberate through all 13,000 employees, through every layer of management in our State Department, and you will immediately see a massive uptick in efficiency. And I think people are going to be very shocked when they see how much more our state can do on much less resources.
Can you do that and not reduce workforce?
I think so. I think largely, I mean, listen, if I was buying a Fortune 500 company that had 13,000 employees, Would I know if all 13,000 are needed? I don't know, right? Until we get there. I can tell you what I have experienced traveling the state for 2 years. I've probably met 1,000 state employees. We've been at a lot of events where there are state employees. The bus tour, we've had multiple state employees at almost every single bus tour stop. So I have seen a massive sample size. I have met some of the most amazing people that care about this state. They, to a person, tell me that the checkbook has run amok. They've seen it. They tell me that the culture is broken. They've had wage freezes recently, right? We're seeing this massive inflation the last 5 years, and now we're doing wage freezes for state employees. They're very frustrated, and I think we're going to see a lot more output overall from the entire state workforce when they have a leader in Peer that clearly cares so much and is working hard, rolling up his sleeves every day, not leaving our state, traveling our state, talking to leaders, talking to people. And then, as always, leading by example. That's how you change culture.
Thinking about traveling around the country, was our last elected governor a good governor?
I think so. I mean, when somebody says, is Toby a good dad? Every single person that's ever met me would say yes. Did I make a few mistakes along the way? Absolutely. I can guarantee you I did. What happens today in this hyper-tense culture in politics is you get somebody that agrees with somebody 7 or 8 times out of 10, and they think they're the greatest person ever, and then as soon as they don't agree on one issue, they blow up social media, right? And so, listen, I was the least political person you ever met till a couple of years ago. I didn't pay that close of attention. I was raising my family, mentoring young business leaders, you know, growing companies. But from afar, I think Kristi Noem was a really good governor. I'm sure if I dug through everything, every policy thing she did, I might find a few that I disagree with. But she put South Dakota on the map. She brought back a culture of winning. She supported Donald Trump, which I appreciate. And a lot of the good folks, a lot of the very good, God-fearing people that have moved to South Dakota from Washington, from California, Minnesota, Illinois, Maine, New York, Colorado, I've met many of them. They're amazing people. You know why they moved here? Because they liked our governor.
I've heard that a lot.
That's why they moved here.
Oh, yeah.
So.
What does it mean to be strictly pro-life?
Well, I believe, I'm glad you brought this up, because a lot of people don't often, which is kind of sad. I will protect life from conception until natural death. I don't believe in anything other than that. I believe children are the biggest gift from God. And I talk a lot about being flexible. As a leader in business, you have to be flexible at times. And there are some issues that I can be flexible on. I love hearing the other person's opinion. Oftentimes, it just solidifies my beliefs. But sometimes, I actually learn something new and I change my mind a little bit. That will never happen on this one, I can promise you that. This is the one issue that is non-negotiable.
No matter what?
No matter what. Period.
What about, the big thing that's been in the news lately in the last little bit was children getting surgeries to reassign them genders. At what point does parental rights, or do parental rights end and government responsibility steps in? Or is there a line there?
I think it's been atrocious what has been allowed to happen in a lot of liberal states around this country. We had, 12, 13, 14, 15-year-old kids being indoctrinated at school, sometimes even younger in grade school. and moms and dads not even knowing some of the content. I think our education, whether it's K through 12 or whether it's our higher education or state universities, I believe that they're there to teach the students the necessary skills they need to move on. Nothing more, nothing less. I don't think we should be making college students wear Donald Trump caps, and I don't think we should be indoctrinating them and pushing far left ideologies on them. From kindergartner all the way through college, the teachers and the professors and the staff should have one goal, and that is to educate each student to the best of their ability, period. Right? And so mom and dad should know exactly what their kids are being taught in school. And there shouldn't be anything happening in school without mom and dad's consent. I can't even envision a scenario where mom and dad shouldn't be involved in any decision for any minor mm-hmm. under the age of 18 years old. So, that's kind of the standard age that was picked long before you and I were running around. And I think that's a reasonable age for people to start making their own decisions.
Except for cigarettes now.
Except for cigarettes. Yeah, you got to be 21 to buy cigarettes.
And alcohol.
Yeah.
And handguns. Some rifles, or can you buy any rifle? I can't remember. But yeah, so we have these weird lines that extend farther and some are shorter. But the mindset that I want your thoughts on is one that says, don't tell me what to inject in my kid when it comes to a vaccine or medical treatment. But like, how can you hold that view and then also hold the view that says, I'm going to tell a parent what they are not allowed to do with their kid when it comes to other kinds of medical treatment? I'm not talking, for me, the question isn't whether I agree or not. It's how do you hold the view that don't tell me what to inject in my kid, but then tell me what to inject in my kid? Like, it seems like we have two sides of this coin that we almost have to say parents' rights are paramount or they're not.
I see a big difference between forcing parents to vaccinate their children and prohibiting the parents from being able to start puberty blockers on 10, 11, and 12-year-old kids. That's child abuse. And if the parents are doing that to young children, they have a mental issue that should be addressed.
The parents or the kids?
The parents. Are you kidding me? Those two issues could not be more polar opposite. I understand why you asked it, but in my opinion, it's not a fair comparison. And so the overwhelming majority of the parents that are trying to transition these children at a young age have mental stability issues. And I know that's gonna make people upset, but I'm sorry, that's the truth. Look at Hollywood. Do you know what the rate of transitioning kids is in Hollywood compared to regular America? Exponentially higher. Some Hollywood celebrities have 3 or 4 kids and they've all transitioned. These people are sick. They're sick in the head.
Are they sincere?
No, they're not sincere. It's a trend. It's a fad. It's all this stuff. It's a sickness. We should be protecting these children. Nobody should be doing these things to these kids until they are of an adult age and can consent and make their own decision, period.
Is there a time when government can or should mandate a medicine?
Governments, I believe government have two responsibilities.
Okay.
Number one, it's to build an infrastructure so that people can live a fruitful life and have an opportunity, right? Roads, bridges, water, all the necessary things we need to live in modern society. That's number one.
So, okay, but before we move on, that's good. So then it doesn't matter as much. It's less important how they get the money. Just they need to be funded because that's an important foundational principle for society.
Totally. If we didn't have them doing it, it would never get done. It would be utter chaos, right? And number two is to keep the citizens that are in that ecosystem safe, to keep them safe, have law and order, right? beyond that, we have to be very careful. I believe in largely absolute freedom, and people need to be able to make their own choices. And guess what? That can be dangerous for some people, because some people tend to make bad decisions over and over and over. But what is the alternative option? To start making those choices for people? That's a slippery road, because you can't guarantee when leaders or legislators are being elected from one decade to another, you can't trust them to do the right thing. You get bad people in office, and they take that little bit of wiggle room we give them, and they keep expanding it, and they keep expanding it. Next thing you know, we are in full socialism mode. And so freedom is dangerous.
But to say that the second valid priority of government is to be to ensure safety, doesn't that then kind of allow for the government, whoever's in those roles, to begin to become heavy-handed? And it is that slippery slope that says it's for your safety. And so at some point, then we start making decisions for you because you're just too dumb. You don't quite understand the dangers. And so we're going to do that for you.
Again, I think you're trying to compare a police officer saving me from a lunatic with a knife to this fraud that Anthony Fauci and all these people in D.C. did. They lied to us. They lied to us about COVID. The entire Biden administration, the people that we were supposed to trust the most, lied to us about COVID to get us to take shots, to get us to put these ridiculous masks on, to get people to stay home, to take kids away from the structure in schools. It had a decades-long impact negatively.
To what end, do you think?
To what end do I think? Keep people safe and let them make their own decisions. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't trust the information that's coming out of some of these globalist entities. So just because they say something is the way it is, we're just supposed to say, oh, okay. Like, no.
Is it new that there's been a reason to doubt them?
Listen, I'm not a historian. I don't think so. I think just the access to the information is easier today. Social media in 2007, when the iPhone was first released, I think that started this massive upward trend of people, if they wanted to, having the access and the ability to do their own research on specific topics, where in the past you had to sit in front of a television every night for 30 minutes and be told what was actually happening. And so
by the guy with the cigarette.
By the guy with the cigarette. Yeah. It's Joe Cool, baby. I'm old enough to remember that side of some things. And so, I know I look really young, Craig, but I'm not,
right.
I'm not as
you know,
young.
I wonder, right? Do you even meet the criteria? are there proper limits that should be put on the Second Amendment?
No, absolutely not.
Period.
Period.
So there's nothing. So
no.
I should be able to walk in the door by the same fully automatic weapons that the military has.
100%. Listen, I mean, the guns aren't the ones that are growing legs and driving and doing these horrible shootings. It's the same lunatics that are trying to transition their 10-year-old daughters into boys that are grabbing these guns and killing people.
But they also
drive people over with mm-hmm. cars. They also stab people on subways in New York. Like, it's not the gun.
But the argument, though, is that the gun makes the damage easier to commit. And so if we go back to the argument.
Let me play devil's advocate for a moment. Let's just say, hypothetically, we ban guns tomorrow. This problem doesn't go away for 1,000 years. There's hundreds of millions of weapons. It's never going away. Trying to legislate gun safety is never going to work.
Yeah, but Australia, they've had a buyback. Hello. And they burned them all.
Would you live in Australia right now with their policy
spiders
on guns?
No, and snakes are terrible.
Okay. All right. I'll take my chances. Like, the problem with the left is they always try to legislate to the weakest part of the population. And it has an adverse effect.
Is that kind of the point of laws, though? Like, it's really addressing the outlier?
I don't think it ought to be necessarily. I think the people that are getting up every day, working the hardest, doing the best for society, helping their neighbors, right? I think they're the people that should be given opportunities to expand and grow, right? And when people do that all day, every day, and all they get is more taxes, and they see where the taxes are being distributed, and they see that people are taking some of these benefits and they're going in and they're buying 27 six-packs of Mountain Dew instead of food to feed their children, Sometimes it gets frustrating for some folks, right? And so there has to be common sense. Listen, I grew up in a Social Security family. My dad became disabled when I was barely old enough to walk. And if it wasn't for Social Security, my siblings and I would have been split up to grandparents and whatever. That was literally the only thing that kept my family together. So I understand the need for that for people like actually need it. My dad didn't choose to become disabled, okay? But there are a lot of people that are abusing that system today more than ever. I mean, statistically, by far, more people than ever are abusing government handouts. And
But Social Security wouldn't be considered a government handout. Am I right in that?
No.
Or is it?
Well, I mean, there's people that have manipulated the Social Security system.
Okay.
Right? So, I mean, like, it's money that comes from the government, and if you aren't owed it and you're manipulating the system, that would sound like a handout to me, right?
Well, theoretically, I mean, the way it was set up is Social Security was not money the government put aside. It was us giving our money to them to hold for us,
right?
Because they've clearly proven that they know how to manage money.
Yeah,
so
sure.
They can hold it for us and then dole it out a little bit at a time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Medicaid would probably be, and food stamps would probably be the other handout.
Yep.
Would that be fair to separate those two?
Based on your definition, yeah, that's probably more closely aligned with what we're talking about. But again, as somebody who grew up in some very terrible financial environments and needed the help, I was the free lunch kid. I mean, I was all of these things. And so I'm the only person in this race, candidly, that has seen both sides of the extremes. I grew up very extreme poverty, and I saw all these things. My dad was a Democrat right to the day he died. And I worked hard. I built a lot of successful companies, and I got to a point at a relatively young age where I knew I had more than I was going to need. So I felt like it was my duty to help distribute it. So I started new businesses, bought businesses, mentored a lot of young leaders. They had to earn it. I wasn't just going to hand them money, but I gave them opportunities to start in a company with me, be mentored by an amazing business person, and then they thrive and they get to make more money. Like, that's literally the American dream. It's not a handout. It's having somebody like me take the time to give you an opportunity and then teach you all the skills and the discipline you need to maximize that opportunity. That's the American dream. It's not just sitting at home on your couch in your underwear playing Xbox waiting for a government check. That's not the American dream. Toby Doden is the American dream. The people that I've helped, many people I've helped get financially independent at young ages, that's the American dream. It wasn't a handout. They got the money in return for hard work, dedication, right? Like that's how the system is. That's how capitalism is set up, right? And so, you know, it's, I mean, we could talk about this all day, but I mean, I have a pretty firm belief that people that wake up every day, have a great attitude, and work as hard as they possibly can, good things will happen for them.
So let's say you become governor next year. Can we get rid of at least minimum the front license plate on cars?
Well, I've probably been asked 10,000 questions on this bus tour, and that one has not came up yet. You know, to be frank, I don't know what the exact reasonings are that we still have to. I know there's states like Kansas, where my sister lives, that only has one license plate. So, I mean, if there's no terrible reasons to eliminate it, sure. The problem is, and I get asked a lot of, you know, secondary questions on this bus tour, we have so many really, really important things to fix that are actually negatively impacting the people of this state. I hope I'm so efficient as your next governor, Craig, that we get through all the big issues and I actually get to work on issues like license plates. That would mean that I did one hell of a job getting our schools back on track, getting property taxes lower, getting rural health care built out, getting our infrastructure rebuilt. If I can get through all those things and I'm still your governor, I promise you I will bring you in. I will put you on my license plate task force. And we will get that done, my friend. Oh, man.
I'd be game to eliminate the license plate, period.
That was a statement,
none.
So I'm not responding.
Like, well, no, right.
There was no question.
And they're ugly. I don't understand. The law says it has to show Mount Rushmore. That has to be visible. And then the design is that we put all the letters directly on the faces of Rushmore.
Right. Yeah.
What an insult.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's another statement. I apologize. How? Sorry. What do you do for fun?
I come to Millbank for podcasts in my spare time. That's what I do for fun. Listen, thank you for asking me that because it's a non-political question. I appreciate it. I am definitely a one-off. I would be the first to admit that I'm not the smartest guy in the world. I'm pretty smart, but I'm not the smartest. I don't have the greatest skills. I'm not the best at everything. It took many years to sculpt myself into an amazing leader and an amazing CEO. And the reason and the way I did that, I've never had a hobby. Not much of a hunter. I didn't fish. I didn't do any of these things. I worked from sun up until sundown for 20 straight years while my amazing wife raised our four kids. I missed birthday parties. I'm not proud of this. I'm just telling you. I missed birthday parties. I missed concerts at the school. I missed a lot of things because my goal in life was to break the chains of poverty that had been plaguing my family for generations. And I was willing to sacrifice anything to do that. And I did do that. And in order to do that, by the time you're 45 years old, when you started with less than nothing, in fact, I had $50,000 in hospital bills when I was 21. To do that in 24 years, there is no time for fun. I will tell you, I was having a lot of fun the last two or three years. My wife and I were flying all over the country. We got to do a lot of things we missed in our 20s, 30s, and 40s. Took a few family vacations. I was having a great time. And then I woke up one day and I realized that our state was heading down the path of Minnesota, Colorado. And CEO Toby woke up and said, this is your new challenge. This is what the good Lord has brought to you now, Toby. So you don't have to have any more fun. You don't get to do fun things anymore. So I had a sliver. I had about a 2 or 3 year window where I was still working a lot. I mean, I was still probably working 80 to 90 hours a week, but I was able to sneak away for a day here or a day there. We'd go to Nashville for a night. We'd go to a concert. That was my entertainment. It sounds like a pretty terrible life when I'm saying it out loud, to be honest with you. And my poor wife who's standing over here, she's like, yep, I know. I was at home with all four kids. We had four kids in 5.5 years. And
holy cow, where is she? Good work. Oh my.
Look how amazing she looks. She's an amazing woman. I started digitizing my old Hi8 cassettes last week. And I'm not an electronic genius, so I had to do a little chat GPT to figure out. I had to order all the connections. I got them here. I got my first video done. I've never cried so much because a lot of the stuff in the video I didn't get to see.
Mm. No. You cook?
I grill. Does that count? Look up all right. See if grilling counts as cooking.
Of course it does.
I'm a mad griller. I like to grill, and I'll be the first to admit the Liz earmuffs. The reason I like to grill so much is because I like wine. I like a Cabernet Sauvignon. I'll pour myself a nice glass of wine, and I'll go stand by the grill, and I'll put on some Hank Williams Jr. music on my outdoor speakers. I will just stand there and vibe for like 12 to 15 minutes of just utter peace. My phone's in the house. It's on Do Not Disturb. And there. You asked what I did for fun.
All right. Hey.
There you go. I lied. I have fun 12 minutes a month when I get the grill fired up.
No bourbon, just wine, huh?
Yeah. I'm a big wine guy. I like wine and, you know, whatever. I'm not that fussy. I'm a South Dakota guy, man. I'll drink an old Milwaukee's Best if it's 90 degrees out and I'm mowing the lawn.
That's
so.
Too bad. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's what that's what we had back in the day. So,
how important are property rights?
Wow.
And what I mean by that is anything. If I live in town or I live out on 1,000 acres,
property rights is about as important as it gets. You know, we just went through this nonsense with Summit Carbon Solutions, and they were here trying to negotiate easements to connect this pipeline to pump the carbon up to North Dakota. And when they couldn't connect it organically, they couldn't sell enough farmers and ranchers on signing the easement, they tried to forcibly use eminent domain to take away property rights. And I fought back very hard against that, as did lots of people around the state, many thousands and thousands of people. I mean, South Dakota just stood up and said, heck, we're not doing that. So without property rights, what do we have? I mean, and that is largely part of the reason why I'm so passionate about reducing and ultimately getting rid of property taxes, because I think those things kind of go hand in hand. Like, once you own your property, there's no guarantee you're always going to have a steady income. You can lose your job. You can have a health issue. There's a million things. The government should not be able to confiscate your property from you because you can't pay your property taxes. It's not right. It's never been right. It will never be right. And the fact that we still have politicians like Dusty Johnson that parade all over this country talking about how property taxes are fair and just and all these things, like, he's never mingled in rural South Dakota with people that would die on their land to protect it, including myself. And he's just so out of touch with reality as to the most of the people in the state. He flies around the state. He came to Aberdeen recently. He meets with 10, 12, 15 donors, takes his check, and he flies to the next town. Then he flies to the next town. He has him at the airport. He won't even drive to go see people. He flies into airports, and he summons all of the check writers to the airport. He collects their checks and he leaves. While he's doing that,
it's more efficient. Come on, Toby.
I'm sure. While he's doing that, I'm driving a 46-foot bus around the state, shaking tens of thousands of hands of people that actually live here. Yeah, with this amazing crew. There's such a light and dark difference between people that are actually fighting for South Dakota and our way of life and people that just want to take donors' money and just do whatever the new, sexy thing is, which now is, putting up more wind farms. They're trying to put up more wind farms. I know you don't like the plains. I love South Dakota. That's why I stayed here.
I didn't say I didn't like it. I just like a curvy road every now and then.
I can find, have you drove the lake road from Sisseton to Groton? Like, if you want some curvy roads, my friend.
No.
Oh, dude, all right. My dad, before he passed away, used to drive to all of my children's high school games with Liz, usually, and when I could go. And a couple of times we went to Sisseton and we'd always take the back roads, and he'd get car sick really bad. Liz and I have cried, literally happy tears, retelling the stories of my dad swearing at me. Every four-letter word you can think of from the back seat, he swore like a sailor, and I used to pretty bad. I'm getting better. I'm trying not to swear anymore. So, but when you grow up with a father, who was disabled and a little grumpy once in a while, he'd throw out some four-letter bombs. And him driving, those curves are amazing. Like, if you love curves, you ride motorcycle?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what an amazing drive. It's beautiful, too. I mean, that's some beautiful country up there in that Sisseton area. You're on the lakes there, Clear Lake. What's the other one? Pickerel Lake.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. I've driven around that one.
Beautiful,
yeah.
Beautiful, mm-hmm. Beautiful part of the state. Yep.
Well, I know you have an event to get to. So where is the best place for people to find out more about you and where you are going to be next? Because is it right that your goal is to hit every city in the state or every county?
We embarked on a 66-county bus tour, but now we've done probably 100 and I don't even know the number, 120, 130 actual stops. Some of the counties are quite large, so we go to multiple cities. Grant County is County 65.
Really?
Yep, and in a couple weeks, we had one that got canceled on us, so we're going to pick that back up on a West River swing. In Haakon County, we're going to the town of Phillip.
Oh, yeah.
Early November, and that will be the 66th county, which will thus end the first and probably only 66-county bus tour inside of 15 weeks that's ever been done in South Dakota. So we're very proud of that. And then we kind of move on to stage two. It's like three equal parts. The first part was like a four-month bus tour, and then we've got like a second 4 months, and then the last 4 months, as is going to be February, March, April, May, is going to be just 24/7. We're going to be crisscrossing the street state every day, city after city after city. I would bet by June 2nd of 2026 that we will have hit a big majority of the cities in this state, which is pretty crazy.
That is wild, yeah.
Yeah, but listen, I've lived here 51 years, and I hadn't been to many of the counties, right? I mean, I explained to you what my lifestyle was like all those years. I didn't have time to go to Day County, let alone Haakon County, right, or, you know, all these other ones. And so my wife was with me on almost every stop outside of just maybe a few. And my son, Jonathan, who also has a full-time job in Aberdeen, but has also traveled with us on this tour, they've gotten to see almost every single county with me.
That's so cool.
Here's an interesting fact that's only interesting to me, but that's okay.
That's what we're here for.
That's what I'm here for. I'm the only person on the Doden campaign that's been to every campaign stop.
Okay. Hey,
I'm the only one that's in every county. There is not another human being that can say they did the 66-county mm-hmm. bus tour other than Toby Doden. So I think I should get some kind of an award for that.
So where's the best place to find you online?
TobyDoden.com.
And your last name is spelled?
D-O-E-D-E-N. TobyDoden.com. Upcoming events. If you want to send us $5 or $10, feel free to do that. I do vet every single donation. So if you're one of the people I've already turned down donations from, don't try to sneak in a bunch of small donations. I will remember who you are and why you wanted to give me the money. You can see all of my policy stuff on there, and we're updating it all the time too. So, and some merch, hats, some
swag.
You want a hat or something? Like, you don't have to pay for it. Like, we'll get you something.
Absolutely.
Here. It's been pretty amazing. And also, listen, I'm sorry, I got to throw another plug in here real quick. We talked about the bus stop, but we didn't really talk about the bus tours stops. I didn't just show up, give a 5 or 10 minute speech and walk out the back door. These events have been averaging somewhere between 2 and 4.5 hours long. I show up, I give my speech, we hand the mic to the people. And we've had groups as big as 200 people. Our average is probably 60, 70, 80 people come to these. I don't leave until every question has been answered. Sometimes I've done over 100 questions in one town hall. No rules. Just like you and I did. I didn't give you any rules. You can ask me anything you want. I do this. And some people that show up there don't like me. They don't like my policies. It's open to anybody, right? We're not, unlike Dusty Johnson, we don't make people show IDs at the door and check it against a list and then refuse people to come into your events. Like, we let everybody in. Nobody's ever done that in this state. And certainly nobody's ever done it to the extent that we've done it. They were keeping a log at one point. We were at like 20-some-hundred questions, and we stopped counting. But I'm very proud of that, and the people of South Dakota are responding to that. I've had people that have sent in through, because you can send a message in through the website. After the event, they'll say, I didn't agree with half of the things you said, but I really appreciate you coming to XYZ City, because nobody has ever came to our city before. And that's, you know, win, lose, or draw. I'm very proud of that.
Awesome. Toby Doden, thank you so much for being willing to sit in here and with no idea where we're going. Good luck. I hope travel goes well, and I hope the event tonight is good.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
Thanks again, Toby, for sitting down with me here in the studio and prioritizing going to every county in South Dakota to be seen, to meet people, and to present yourself directly to the people of South Dakota. It is much appreciated. Remember, theinterviewpodcast.org is where you can find all the conversations we've had archived there and where you can help support the podcast. If you get value out of these conversations, go to theinterviewpodcast.org, click on the support button, send it back our way. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you on the next one. Have a great week. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.